The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all from Bar Canada at the Day, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. It's all brought to you by DraftKings. Kelly Bidlin, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up,
back
party
in
people?
The saddle. What do you call me?
So what's up, party people?
Party people. Oh, that's my line. What's up, party people? We got Drew Dinsick on the show. Talk NBA with us. Paul Carr on the Premier League. Jim Root on the Final Four. Paul Spore on baseball. You good, man? You good this morning?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm good.
How about that women's college basketball last night?
That was nuts. It's a good time.
First of all, let's start with the nightcap. Paige Beckers, 28-10, 6-3-2. Points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks, leading UConn to the Final Four. For, I believe, the 7,444th time in Geno Auriemma's
career. That sounds right.
Yeah. And they will take on, of course, Iowa behind Caitlin Clark's 41-12, 41 points, 12 assists, 41 points on the strength of 9 threes, 9 of 20 from behind the arc from the unbelievable Caitlin Clark as Iowa takes down LSU yesterday. Congratulations to all who had that. And I'll just say it. Anytime she's involved, and this was the case last year where I couldn't wait to watch her play in the deep stretches of all the way through the championship game of the tournament last year. Anything she's involved in, I think I speak for many and say, I'll watch it. Can't wait for the Friday Final Four game against UConn. And that'll be a tough game. Iowa, by the way, only favored in that game by 2.5 points. South Carolina, the undefeated Gamecocks behind Dawn Staley, 12-point favorites in the other semi against NC State. Those are on Friday. So I guess it should be said we could have, in both the men's and women's games, UConn-NC State finals, potentially, which would just be off the charts, unprecedented.
Yeah, it would.
That's a possibility. But I just thought she's amazing. Because if you watch that game yesterday, talk about Caitlin Clark, obviously, it is clear that LSU as a team has more talent, yeah, top to bottom, than Iowa does. But by the strength of this one dynamic force on a basketball court who can hit it from the parking lot, Iowa just rolled them in the second half. And LSU didn't have any answers for them. It's amazing.
It's absurd. It's fun to watch. Like you're talking about, it's fun to watch her every single time she hits the court. When it's something that means something, though, yeah, like it is, becomes appointment television for me. We both watched it last night. I was watching it, audio up. NBA was on the side TVs for me last night. Like that was, it was great. And like, I mean, the breakneck pace they were playing
the
out of the
pace
gate
in the first
game,
half,
yeah,
was unbelievable.
I don't know about you. I mean, as soon as Angel Reese like grabbed her ankle, I was like, live bedtime. But like, then she came right
then she
back.
Came right back.
She had a great game too.
What I think is interesting, though, beyond betting, is I think we represent probably most male sports fans who have grown up loving sports, which is women's sports have not been necessarily the gravitational pull for us. Until this, quite frankly, which I like love watching in a way that I've never quite loved the WNBA, but maybe this is the generation that changes that as they grow, mm-hmm, older and get into the WNBA.
Caitlin Clark's still just special. Like,
she's special.
It's her.
It's her.
With all due respect to Paige Beckers and everybody else, yeah, we're talking about, I tuned in for Caitlin Clark because she's one of the best shooters of the basketball I've ever seen, male or female.
I do want to make this one point, though, and I attribute it to Will Hill, who often makes good points, but I think made the best point about this, which is for all the talk about this, and people can complain about ESPN over-promoting. Some people have a problem with that they push these sports to you. Obviously, there's things that happen off the court that swirl around race and gender, particularly when it comes to this LSU team and their head coach. Has her own swirling of things off the court. But I think Will's point is the best, which is take all of that stuff aside. We'll let others deal in that kind of realm. The issue is that until you get to criticize from a basketball standpoint in the same way that we do men's sports, it's never quite going to rise up to the level. So let's take an example of that last night. I was watching the game. And again, not the most astute women's college basketball observer because I haven't watched as much as others have. But it was very apparent to me, right? They pointed out at halftime, you know, LSU was going under the picks when Caitlin Clark was getting a pick,
yeah,
you know, to free her up. Obviously ridiculous. There didn't seem to be an adjustment to that. As I'm watching, I'm thinking the whole time on offense, I'm like, why isn't every possession going through Flauje? She is clearly the best player on the court, can do anything for LSU. And it just appeared like they were, we're going with Haley Van Lith as the starter for every possession. And I just thought that change should have happened too. And so Mulkey would get crushed today for that. I doubt she will. And then, you know, the Angel Reese thing is interesting. Yeah, she filled up a stat sheet. She went 17-20. She's had 78 career triple doubles in 3 years. I get it. She's great. Maybe it was the injury, but I thought she kind of stunk it up in the second half. Like, she's just throwing the ball up against the backboard. Her jump shot is very awkward. Mm-hmm. Like, there's things like that that if it were the men's side, that would be to open the show with that stuff. But people are still a little too reticent to do that, even though I just laid it out here on the show. right? But what I'm saying is, until we get to that point where it feels comfortable doing that, I think it's a great point about the difference between men's and women's sports.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's, I think there's still a lot of little things you could pick at, you know what I mean? But, just going back to Caitlin, she is incredible.
It's awesome.
I mean, no defender could handle her. Like, she picked up fouls. I mean, like, Lilith, whatever her name is. Like, I mean, she was at, like, three fouls immediately. She couldn't stay in front of her. It was incredible.
First thing we should probably learn the names. That's probably the first thing we should. Whatever her name is.
I actually feel like she's, I feel like she's been around for 6 years now because she was on Louisville beforehand.
Well, by the way, I saw Doug Gottlieb making this point, but he's acting like he was the first. But I was actually texting with Danielle Alvari a couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
And she made the point that Haley Van Lith, she's the one. She's the KD of all of this. She was the best player at Louisville. They got to the Elite Eight last year, and then she went to play with LSU. And so there's a KD-like backlash to her playing for the Tigers, which I think is an interesting point that doesn't get made quite enough, right?
I'm going home now. Couldn't guard Caitlin. See ya.
Yeah. Well, by the way, this is the recipe for how Alabama beats UConn. And I'm not talking about one person like Caitlin Clark, but everybody on the team just hoist threes all game. Hoist threes and make as many as you can. We don't usually start a show with a tweet, but can I today? This is from Trip Tepper. Are we sensing a resurgence of Tankapalooza in the NBA? Raptors have lost 13 in a row. Jazz have tanked 9 in a row, and the Blazers have dropped 10 in a row. All right. Back in 2018, we did a thing here on a numbers game called Tankapalooza in the NBA. At that time, the worst team in the NBA, the team that finished with the worst record, will get 25% of the ping pong balls towards the NBA draft. 25% of the ping pong balls. You were the only team that got that high of a percentage of the ping pong balls, and therefore you had a higher percentage of chance to get the number one pick than any other team. Sure enough, that year, we identified that these teams were actively tanking to get the 25% of the ping pong balls and the worst record. What do I mean by that? We took a lot of incoming. Even Brent Musburger and I had a conversation off air. He was like, what are you talking about? They're tanking. These players aren't tanking. It's never the players. It's never the players on the court. But you had incidents towards the end of the 2018 NBA season where the Dallas Mavericks, if they were still involved in a tight game, mysteriously Dirk Nowitzki and J.J. Barea would be taken off the court with 90 seconds left. Devin Booker had a mysterious hand injury that kept him out of game after game after game after game. The prize was DeAndre Ayton that year. And by the way, Phoenix was the best tankers of them all. They lost their last 27 games that year. Look it up. 0-27 against other teams that were in non-tanking mode. 0-27 down the stretch. They ended up with DeAndre Ayton. And while that may elicit a snicker from you, remember that the Suns actually got to the NBA Finals with DeAndre Ayton as a key cog in that wheel. Back in 2021, they lost to the Bucks. So the rules changed after that. Instead of 25% going to the worst team, they made it so 14% of the ping pong balls went to the worst three teams after that. And so while we looked to see if Tankapalooza existed the next year, we quickly realized that it didn't. By the way, if you're wondering how did we do, we estimated that we went back and looked at it. We ended up hitting over 30 Tankapalooza legs against one loss in Tankapalooza 2018. It was unbelievable. The only aberration was, I think, Dennis Schroeder. I want to say he was playing for the Hawks at the time. He didn't get the assignment. Like, one night, he scored, like, 40-something. Like, what are you doing?
That sounds about
right. Tankapalooza. So the question, Trip, is a valid one. Does it exist? Here is the problem beyond the 14% of the ping pong balls with three teams. Kelly, what was that? What was that article you cited yesterday? What was the headline
from NBA Central? The article about how some of the most experienced front office people in the NBA this year believe that this could be the worst draft class they have ever seen in their years of working in the NBA.
Ever. So Victor Wembanyama, this just in, he got drafted last year. That was a thing. This year is the opposite of that. By the way, it was Banchero and Holmgren the year before that. Not only was it Wembanyama last year, but remember it was Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson. This year, here are, you know, just to give you an idea, the Ringer had Donovan Klingon going seventh, if you look at mock NBA drafts. ESPN has him going third. The Ringer had Shepard from Kentucky, Reed Shepard going first before the tournament. Now, after Kentucky got bounced, they have him going ninth. You know who the three top prizes are in this year's NBA draft? Any idea?
I know the star kid's in there somewhere. I don't know where,
Alexandre
though.
Sarr. Let's just call him Alex Sarr.
Who I believe is a Frenchman playing in Australia.
That's correct. Another French prospect by the name of Zachary Richachet.
Yeah, he's been up there too. Yeah, I'm looking at him right now on top of a box.
And a Serbian guard by the name of, are you ready for this for more confusion?
Nikola
Topic. So enjoy that. By the way, there's also the Spurs polluting this. If they end up getting the number one pick, because they'll still be in the lottery, they'll draft differently having Wembanyama than any other team will. So it's not clear who's the best or who will be first and who you'll end up drafting second or third. It's not worth tanking. So from a betting standpoint, no, not doing it.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with a free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter,
Bill chats with Brent Musburger and some women's college basketball opening line splits. How about UConn and Iowa? 95% of the initial handle on Iowa.
No surprise there. Bill's Late Night is your morning, Kelly. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Drew Dinsick about to join us. I just want to finish the thought because the commercial rudely interrupted us.
Yes.
Rudely.
By the way, Books had to get killed on that game last night, right?
Oh, she hit every prop.
Like, I mean, every prop went over.
Everything. Everything.
What were the? I'll check the splits on that. That'd be like 98% of the handle was on the over on that.
Oh, she had every prop you can imagine. Dream up a prop, she went over. Just want to finish again, in case you missed it, Trip Tepper was asking about, you know, the fact that these three teams in particular, the Raptors have lost 13 in a row, the Jazz have tanked, he uses the word tanked 9 in a row, and the Blazers have dropped 10 in a row. And I was just giving the dissertation beforehand about how we used to exploit this kind of thing, you know, it's hard to believe, 6 years ago. And by the way, if you have Moneyline parlayed against those teams, mazel tov to you. Good for you. But but the question is it a thing that I would recommend doing? And it's not because of the nature of what we just described. There is no specific prize. There is no franchise, you know, clear franchise generational player like Wembanyama. Although, again, the three foreign prospects I just outlined might end up being that. Nikola Topic, by the way, yeah. Kelly. So, no, I am not going to sit here and say, hey, this is a thing that we should do on a nightly basis because it just doesn't, to use the Gene Steratore line, it doesn't rise to the level of a bet.
Yeah, I think there are certain teams that you can definitely pick on this time of year, but I think that's the case every year, no matter what the draft class looks like. You've got a lot of teams that have waved the white flag. Some of them done it a month. You know, it feels like the Raptors kind of did that about 3-4 weeks ago at this point. You know, we talk about the Spurs off the air. The Spurs, I think this is maybe the perfect example of a team that, like, to answer the Tepper question, they're waving the white flag with putting Vassell and Sohan basically out for the rest of the year, but they're going to keep throwing Wemby out there and let him do his thing. So do you want to try to get in front of Wemby every single night? It's not really something I'm looking to do.
We also have to make the distinction between tanking and just being bad at basketball.
Right.
Some teams are just bad at basketball. And teams that are bad at basketball might have a good night every once in a while. So it's not the same dynamic, I guess, to wrap it up. Drew Dinsick does join us. He's the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. Andy Molitor with a great Kim Mulkey tweet yesterday where he said, hear me out. It's just so great. And then NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which, of course, he does with Jay Croucher. Whale_Cappers, where you can find him on Twitter. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Interesting. It is interesting to try to kind of handicap motivations this time of year in the NBA. You know, I think Kelly kind of hit the nail on the head with in general, you know, but specifically with the Raptors. The Raptors were de-incentivized to win because if they did not finish in the top seven, they give their first round pick to the San Antonio Spurs next year. So, you know, really no good way for them to team build unless they were losing, which is kind of why I think in general they pulled the rug. All that said, I bet the Raptors tonight.
Yeah,
I think
there you go. 12.5 points
is an awful lot. Market seems pretty convinced you're going to get both, you know, full effort from LeBron and AD in this one. And, you know, for what it's worth, the Raptors have kind of secured their future from what what I can tell. And I don't think, you know, now that they're bringing quickly in general, some of the players who were given extra time to get right, they're bringing them back into the fold. I think you're going to see a little bit more of an honest effort out of these guys coming down the stretch here. No Scotty Barnes, of course, but RJ Barrett and quickly likely to play tonight.
Yeah, that does, by the way, that does is worth repeating that while I was focused on tanking to get the number one pick, yes, if a team has a stipulation from a previous trade that would toggle their pick to another team, that's obviously something to know. And in the case of the Raptors, despite Drew taking the points, that is something to know. By the way, Drew comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Any other NBA plays tonight?
Yeah, there's two high leverage games that I took side on. The first is the Clippers. I laid the two against the Kings. The Kings are in a really, really, really rough spot. Not from a rest standpoint. In fact, this is a pretty balanced Kings small rest advantage tonight. But I don't think that matters as much as not having Kevin Huerter or Malik Monk available. Two pretty important parts of their spacing overall. That's kind of how the Kings have lived and died this entire successful run that they've had with Sabonis and Fox is kind of the engines. But the supporting cast and the shooting in particular has been huge for them. Now you got to take on a Clippers team that has at least is playing, giving you much more honest effort lately. They steal one against Philly. They give you a very honest effort over the weekend. It does look like they are trying to kind of find some sort of pre-playoff form, whereas most of the month of March, the Clippers were kind of what exactly is happening here? Are you guys just going to be a very unserious team? And I think they've answered the question that this is kind of playoff tune-up time, and that's bad news for the Kings, who are kind of in a nasty spot in terms of player availability. So I laid the two with the Clippers. My fare on that one is 3.5. The other one that I can't really make sense of is Mavericks Warriors. People have been watching the Mavericks, right? Like, did they know what's happening? Like, the Mavericks are like legitimately excellent right now, and the Warriors are coming into this game, they've had a very nice successful stretch here, beating up on some of the dregs in the East Coast, but this is a tough contest, and I don't know exactly how Golden State gets the small advantage here. Yeah, I can't make sense of this one. I think this one should be wrong team favorite here. Yeah, Mavericks should be small favorite.
I'm in on that Dallas side tonight with you too, Drew. I thought that would still surprise me. It's hanging at a dog price. I'm with you. I thought it was going to be a couple points the other way.
As you say that, Drew, as you're saying that, I see the the cartoon thought bubble over your head saying, I can't believe I'm betting against Steph again. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Dude, Steph's picked my pocket quite a lot in the last several years. He did it again last week with the Magic against the Warriors. And, the Magic, March overall was I just took a massive haircut.
I don't know if you know this, Drew. He's the Caitlin Clark of the NBA. He's the Caitlin Clark of the MNBA.
Forgot about that Magic game. That was my biggest NBA bet of the past probably month or something. That was gross.
And Curry, like basically, Draymond gets ejected early. You're like, all right, let's bury these guys. And Magic just played with their food for 3.5 quarters. Finally, give you an honest best effort, and then Curry just knife right in the chest, right at the close there, to make that one in the books for the Warriors. But I mean, I don't, it's tough for me to rate the Warriors as a serious team, and I think the way that Dallas is playing right now is pretty special.
Yeah, that was the night where the Warriors were on a back to back after a game in Miami. They were in Orlando, and then of course Andrew Wiggins stepped up, and then Curry put him to sleep literally with the napping thing that he does. Let me ask you this here. I asked you this right after we got back from vacation after the Super Bowl, and I asked this of Jay Kahn as it pertained to the NHL postseason yesterday. So I'll ask it of you here because I love that you have numbers for this. What is the potential matchup in either the East or the West that you are actually hoping happens because you know that the series price is going to be off and you can't wait to exploit it?
Yeah, we may have talked about this, but it's definitely Thunder Suns. If we get that one, that one's going to be the one I'm the
Still
most
that.
Excited to bet.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. I'll tell you this, though. The, as you look at the current playoff field, I still don't really rate anyone in the East as, you know, realistically taking more than two games off the Celtics. So I think the East is a little bit boring this year. But the West is the opposite. You have potential for some absolutely fantastic matchups here in the West. And the way it's set up right now is probably going to be a balanced draw. But there is a world where Minnesota gets the one. OKC is the two. Denver's the three. If those teams all finish with the same number of wins, Denver is the three. I think OKC has the tiebreak if it's a three-way tiebreak. But the tiebreak rules are absolutely bananas. All I know is that Denver's on the wrong end of the tiebreak for both OKC and Minnesota right now. But that said, if you get OKC and Denver in the 2-3, and you get, say, Dallas and Phoenix in the 6-7, you have potentially massive, massive lopsided strength on, you know, the two. 2-7s and 3-6 compared to, you know, 1-8 and 4-5, and that would make things pretty interesting in terms of just taking a shot on, you know, but I feel like maybe the Clippers even coming back around on them if they can find anything. But to me at least, if the you know, whoever can avoid Denver really in the West is in really strong shape. And if the Mavericks draw Denver in the West, then I think you are going to start asking some serious questions about if the Nuggets price is right, because plus 125 feels pretty favorable in terms of expecting the Nuggets coming out of this very, very competitive West.
All right, we're coming back more with Drew Dinsick. I'm going to ask you to clarify what you just said on the other side, because there are going to be some folks who missed exactly what you were getting at right there. And then Drew is admitting he didn't have the greatest March ever betting. This might be a good sort of thing for all bettors to listen to. It's a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Whatever you're taking us in this morning, we appreciate it. I'm not sure why I screamed YouTube TV there, just there, but it just came out of my body that way. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada, the D. You good, man?
I'm good, man.
Yeah? What are you doing over there? Making NBA bets? What are you?
No, man. No, I'm just checking in on some things. I'm producing over here,
Checking in on
things. Checking in on Will Hill for tomorrow. Okay. You know? Yeah, searching some things on our site.
We got Paul Sporer coming up later on the show to talk some MLB with us. That's Major League Baseball, Kelly. And we'll look at some of these NBA awards. I know we promised to do it yesterday. We sort of dipped our toe into it, but then we got sidetracked. So we'll talk about this because I do want to talk about that Jalen Williams thing, because I don't know if you know this, just less than 3 weeks left in the NBA season, and he's 50-1 for something. And I just want to get into, is this really possible? This
yeah, number numbers coming down too. Like that's that story's picking up. Most improved six man are way up in the air right now.
Nebulous. Let's talk some college hoops. One of the three members of the great three-man weave trio. It's James Patrick Root, everybody. Jim Root joins us, kind enough to do so, at Second Chance Points. Is his own personal Twitter, at 3MW underscore CBB. Of course, three-man weaves. He comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. Yeah, maybe I'm the most Irish member of the Weave, but McEwen, I don't know. He might have me beat there with the MCK last name.
Oh, Kai McKeon. Oh, I don't know. But yeah. Once we make it James Patrick Root, though, I think you might take the cake. Hey, I have a question for you because we're talking about a little bit about this off air, but I don't want to talk about the specifics. I want to talk about just the general handicapping point. We're all watching games. You guys were in Vegas. Hope you. By the way, you have a good time in Vegas, the three of you.
I sure did. Yeah, we all did. A shout out to Circa for being wonderful hosts. It was great to be out there.
What did they give you, a cabana? What happened there?
Yeah, we broadcasted live from Stadium Swim for 4 days. Did our best bet show from there, and they put us up in a room. We got to watch games with Derek Stevens a little bit. Enjoy that. So all the luxury and perks of being out on at Circa downtown.
That's awesome, Kelly. Looking to see if we can get a cabana one day. Yeah, just look into that.
Hey, you got it.
Okay, thanks. So the before we get into your thoughts on the Final Four, and of course maybe some NIT thoughts tonight. There was a general handicapping point that I think is an interesting one that handicappers have to grapple with. And that is the question of regression and a team either shooting way above or shooting way below their general percentage in either, you know, a game, a stretch of games, or even in this case, I think it was a half of basketball. I don't know if you want to give the specific circumstances of this, but generally, how do you deal with that when you're sort of assessing things at halftime of a ball game?
Yeah, generally, I'm looking at those numbers and trying to see if, like you said, if a team is shooting above or below. And sometimes it's even, you know, the opposition. I think one of the biggest examples in this tournament was Clemson. Through three games, their opponents were 14 of 75 from three. That is sub 19%. And so to me, the games I had watched, it felt like while they were playing good defense, there were a lot of open shots being missed by their opponent. So then they go to the Alabama game, the Crimson Tide start 1 for 12 from three, and it's kind of a, oh no, it's happening again. These teams just can't make jumpers against them. And then Alabama completely catches fire. They make 15 threes the rest of the way. They're able to sneak ahead of Clemson there. And, you know, some people could say, oh, Alabama's just a good shooting team and they made shots. But like Clemson had beaten Arizona, really good shooting team. They beat Baylor, one of the best shooting teams in the entire country, with them shooting well below their season percentages. So I was kind of clinging to the idea that there might be some regression coming, that perhaps they were giving up better shots than the numbers indicated. And I think for a little bit, NC State had that going too, especially the Marquette game. I think they gave up a lot of open jumpers that just didn't fall. But then their defense against Duke was phenomenal. Like I didn't think that was a regression thing. Duke did hit some jumpers in the final minute when the game was out of hand, but for most of it, it was just they were forcing tough shots. Duke didn't have an offensive plan. So overall, I'm looking at it, and especially like you said, halftime, second half stuff, try to take a peek at that and see if it is matching up with my eye test. And that can sometimes lead to a second half wager. Like in that Duke game, I did bet a little bit on the second half over just because I thought both teams are getting more open shots than were actually going in. I think there are only 48 points at halftime of that game.
Yeah, and I can't remember which game it was that I actually tweeted you because I agreed with you. I don't know if it was the Clemson-Arizona game. I don't know if it was the Clemson-Baylor game. Whichever it was, where I felt like the announcers, right? We often say this as bettors. This is where, like, the mainstream announcers can kind of help us with bets because they're promulgating a narrative that isn't actually true, right? So the Clemson thing, and I like Brian Anderson, but Brian Anderson, I remember distinctly saying, boy, that Clemson defense. And I'm just like, no, they're just missing open threes, man. Like, and I felt like that took people down the wrong path, that he kept saying that and kind of opened up an opportunity for us.
Yeah, I think, you know, I got caught doing it, I think, in both the Arizona and Baylor games where I live bet the other side against Clemson because I thought, hey, these jumpers are going to start falling. They're going to start falling. And I tweeted like, oh, it's like hitting on 16. Well, you just got to keep doing it, even if it doesn't work. And then, you know, what did I do? I did not live bet Alabama when they got down against Clemson. And you know, we all know what happens when you switch strategies mid-shoe.
Sure.
Yeah. It always comes back to bite you. And that's what it did there. Alabama came all the way back and covered.
Yeah. And let me just point out, it might not happen in that very game, but it might happen as it did down the road in the Clemson-Alabama game. Okay. Before we get to the Final Four, any thoughts on either of tonight's two NIT semis? Utah and Indiana State, where the Sycamores are 3.5-point favorites. The total is 163. And then Georgia and Seton Hall is the nightcap. Seton Hall, 4.5-point favorites with the total set at 146.
Nothing super strong, especially the Seton Hall one. They've got some injuries that I'm not totally sure who's going to end up playing. I kind of have an interest in Indiana State, though. To me, it feels so important to them and that program that they're at this point still. You know, Indiana State hasn't had this kind of postseason success in quite a while. And, they, you know, it's very local to them. Terre Haute to Indianapolis, not a difficult travel. They had a very nice fan send-off leaving Terre Haute. So I think they're going to have a pretty solid contingent in the crowd. And they've got basically everybody playing. Their top six, that's who matter, and all those guys have been playing. Whereas Utah's still a little banged up. Riley Worcester has missed about 15, 20 games the second half of the season. Travel may be a little bit tougher for Utah coming over to Hinkle. The number is tilted their way a little bit. I will say that. I think it's kind of reflective of the difference in travel. But I just think the Sycamores have taken this tournament as seriously as anybody, and they've got some advantages in terms of the speed on the floor compared to Utah. So I do like Indiana State tonight.
Yeah, and I wonder if this is one of those games where the more advanced bettors betted on the money line because they have more of a stomach for the minus 170 or whatever, the best money line you can find out there for the Sycamores. A more advanced or more savvy, more professional bettor will say value's value. I'm laying the money line juice, right? I don't want to deal with the spread. Whereas the more novice bettor will be like, minus 170 sure sounds like a lot. I'm going to lay the 3.5, leaving themselves open for the uncomfortable non-cover there, if you will.
I buy that. One like helpful thing there, Indiana State's number two in the country in free throw percentage. So hopefully if it comes down to that, they can cover, but you never know. You know, you don't want to be laying over possession is always much more nerve wracking than the money line.
All right, let's get to it, Jim. Saturday, Final Four. Not sure if you're aware of this. It begins with NC State and Purdue. Boilermakers favored by 9.5 now. It keeps ticking upwards. 146.5 the total here. God, people love Purdue. Like, have they watched what NC State is doing? I don't get this.
Yeah, I opined during the NC State Duke game that we would have two double-digit spreads in this round, and that's like it's only been one double-digit spread in the Final Four since 1999. The fact that we're very close to two kind of tells you how good the top teams are and how much people value them. Yeah, the Purdue NC State matchup, I mean, everybody's going to discuss it, but I think it comes down to Burns versus Edey. Burns has been singularly dominant this entire tournament run. Teams can't handle him 1v1, but he's had a major strength advantage against basically everybody he's gone against. I don't think that happens against 7'4", 300-pound Zach Edey. I think people will continue to complain about Edey's lack of committing fouls, but he is terrific at verticality, forcing you to shoot over the top. Does Burns have the touch to do that? I don't know. I think NC State's offense becomes a lot less imposing if he can't score one-on-one and you don't have to double team and he can't fan it out to open shooters. That said, the number does feel a little bit high to me. I've adjusted my power rating NC State fairly significantly relative to what it was at the beginning of the tournament. And they're just playing with kind of the air of confidence coming into this game. And Purdue's offense is very complex, but they've got, you know, a lot of time to deal with it. So I do lean NC State there.
And then UConn by 12 now. Speaking of ticking upwards, UConn by 12 over Bama. 160 is the total.
Yeah, this one I tweeted right away when the circle line came out. I took 10.5, and I think it dipped to 10 for a very brief second, but now it's pretty well settled in at 12. I just think UConn is a complete, you know, monstrous force, given they've been up by 30 in every single game they played in this tournament. They covered every single tournament game last year. I think they're an impossible prep because of their intricate offense. Defensively, they've got Klingon, or they can play a lot more switchy with Samson Johnson. I just don't think anybody really has answers for them right now. And Alabama is going to be super one-dimensional shooting the three. So unless they make like 16 to 20 again, which they're capable of, I think this ends up being a runaway, especially in the paint. I think UConn just completely decimates them in the two-point range in the arc. So I did take the 10.5 and still lean their way at 12.
Okay. Please let the 16 for 20 happen. I would love to see it. I might have a future on Alabama, but I'd still love to see it anyway. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Jim Root, at Second Chance Points. That's with the number 2. And at 3MW underscore CBB for all of Three Man Weave stuff. We'll talk NBA awards on the other side. What of most improved player and beyond? I won't go crazy on Wembanyama today. I already did it yesterday. It's a numbers game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, why don't you, of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. You see this kid in the UFL who kicked a 64-yard field goal? How's he not playing in the NFL?
I have no idea. No idea.
64-yard field. By the way, he kicked a 64-yard field goal. His name is Jake Bates. He kicked a 64-yard field goal with just 3 seconds left to play to give the Panthers an 18-16 win. The Michigan Panthers, by the way, Kelly.
I was going to say, what city or state are we from?
Just like Panthers. You know the Panthers. The Michigan Panthers, 18-16 win over the St. Louis Battlehawks. That after he nailed a 64-yarder.
There was a timeout.
There was a timeout,
right?
So he had to kick it again, and he nails it again.
Yeah, they were showing, I think I was watching ESPN, they were showing the replays of that and trying to walk, like, talk it through, and it was... Like, it was like the same kick. Like, I couldn't tell which kick was which kick.
Right, it had the same trajectory.
By
the way, the Lions, the Lions are one of multiple NFL teams that have already reached out about Bates now as the kicker.
So the story was he kicked in high school, I guess, then played soccer in college.
Yeah.
And then went
at
back.
At Central Arkansas. How is he not kicking at Central Arkansas or at Texas State?
Yeah, I don't really know.
At Texas State, they only let him kick off.
Right.
They're like,
he was doing kickoffs.
Field goals are too advanced for you. Just kick off with that leg of yours.
He must have been all over the place.
Jake Bates. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some baseball. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, it's our old buddy Paul Sporer at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R on Twitter. He comes to us, of course, from the great Fangraphs. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing very well, Gail. Great to be with y'all.
The Houston Astros cap is because of the no-hitter yesterday?
Absolutely. A little support for Ronel Blanco, 30 years old. Yeah, not even a journeyman, because I don't think he's been in multiple organizations, so you can't really just say that. But, you know, kind of an afterthought type guy. Gets in the rotation due to the injuries, goes out there and drops a gem. Had looked good in spring, was doing some things, kind of on the radar a little bit for fantasy. But, you know, with a difficult start there, you know, Toronto, we expect to be a difficult lineup, and then a trip to Texas at the end of this week. He was like a tentative play in fantasy this week. Like, be careful with Toronto and Texas. Boom, drops a no-no. And again, looked excellent doing it. There was nothing fluky about this. The changeup was filthy. His stuff was great. And, you know, just over 100 pitches too. So they didn't have to run him into the ground to get it done.
Yeah, 9 innings, complete game, obviously complete game, no hitter, 105 pitches, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, 105 pitches in his no-no. So just amazing. Ronel Blanco, it felt like the Astros were just taking out all their frustration, 10-0 win, by the way, against the Jays yesterday, all their frustration after getting swept in 4 by the Yankees, and at home, and those games were winnable. For the Astros too, and the Yankees made all the big plays. Let me just ask about the Yankees, who start out of the gates 5-0 now after yesterday. Time for people to start believing.
I mean, sure, like they're a solid team. I still am like a little bit nervous about their starting rotation. Obviously losing Cole was a massive hit to them. I do like the guy who threw yesterday, Luis Gil, youngster, not just saying this because they share a first name, but the best of Luis Gil can look like peak Luis Severino. That's something to get excited about us fantasy folks. Pretty upset about the 4 2/3 yesterday. Didn't get the win there, but he looks pretty good. And obviously they really need Rodon to step up. Got to see what he can do in Arizona this week. He's going going to be instrumental. I think Stroh is what he is, you know, a solid upper threes, low fours ERA guy, going to give you five, six, seven solid innings every time out. Nasty Nestor, if he's healthy, looks pretty good. Schmidt and he are kind of the game changers right now while they wait for Cole to come back. And of course, we know that they're going to go out and make moves too if they're close. Will Warren and Chase Hampton, some interesting prospects that could come up and eat some innings too. So it comes down to the pitching for them. Love a lot of what they got going with the offense. I was actually a big Oswaldo Cabrera breakout fan last year. So classic Sporer a year early for those who have followed my fantasy stuff for years. I've been a year early on so many guys. And so maybe I'm a year early on Oswaldo. We're not going to say too much after five games, but he looks good so far.
There is nothing funnier when the person says of himself, classic me, classic Sporer. Let me ask you about some other teams on the extremes right now. Again, only after a handful of games, not even in some cases. Your Tigers are 4-0. I don't want to ignore that. And the Buccos, the Pittsburgh Pirates, are 5-0. Which is more sustainable over the long term?
Couple of really interesting upstarts that, you know, both the gambling sharps and fantasy folks were really intrigued by both these clubs. I do think it is my Tigers a little bit more. I believe in their pitching top to bottom, not just being a homer here. I am a little bit concerned about the hitting, as we've seen, you know, outside of the little barrage in the 10th inning yesterday. They had been winning by exactly one run in every game, and that was playing the White Sox three times, and they couldn't really get the offense going. There's some good offensive pieces, but they need to get that offense going more if they're really going to stick around. But both are in the Centrals too, which are the weaker divisions right now, and so it gives both a chance for some viability. That Pittsburgh ball club is interesting, and don't forget, they're going to bring up Paul Skeens at some point. I really believe in him. I think he's a guy, you know, he's a Paul S, right? So he's guaranteed to be great just by virtue of being a Paul S. But I'm really excited about Paul Skeens. I think Pittsburgh's interesting. I'll give it a little edge to my Tigers there, and again, not just homerism, but the depth of the Tigers pitching is really impressive.
Paul Simon, Paul Stanley, for those of you who know music.
I'm telling you.
It's a lock. All right, we know about the A's. We know about the Rockies. Each has won a game. So I'm just going to throw them out for the purposes of this conversation. But the Mets are 0-4 and the Marlins are 0-5. Same question to the opposite. Like, which of those? Obviously, no one's going to go 0-162, just like nobody's going to do the reverse of that. But which appears to you to be more real suckitude?
You know, it's probably this Marlins team right now with this bullpen. It is an absolute nightmare. Tanner Scott had a bad spring. So did Andrew Nardi, a guy that I like that I thought could maybe back him up and take that closer's job. And then I start backpatting myself, classic Spore, backpatting before things are done. And I'm like, well, another bad outing for Scott, and maybe my Anthony Bender speculation pickup will go well. And boom, he promptly gets smoked too. So right now their bullpen's an absolute mess. And that's the easiest way to consistently lose games, is to blow the leads you do have and exacerbate the deficits that you're in. You know, the Mets aren't great, but I like their team a bit more. They have good bullpen pieces. Their rotation is just really rough right now. They're going to put so much on the backs of Severino and Manaea. Manaea looked great against the Tigers. And I like Quintana, but those guys are like threes, Quintana, Severino, Manaea, and they have to be the 1-2-3 for that ball club. So I do think they're a bit better than the Marlins, though. Their suckitude will alleviate a little bit, whereas the Marlins, I am worried, because if you can't get guys out in the middle of games, you just can't win ball games. And bullpens, they're super volatile. It could flip on a dime, but right now it's looking really bad, and it's carrying over a bad spring for the Marlins too. That's the tough part.
By the way, I have this bet, Paul, where I have the Guardians at 65-1 to have the most wins through the month of April, the end of March. Ooh. In the early. The problem is that they're 3-2, and the two losses are already both one-run losses. So it's like, okay.
And one was to Oakland.
And one was to Oakland.
You blew an Oakland dub. Come on.
They came, it was 3-3. They came back, and they had first and third, nobody out, and then dude got picked off at third. So it's just, it's...
I was watching that one.
Brutal. All right, what about DFS today? What do you like?
Be careful of weather right now. So my top recommendation, I like to go cheap. Sometimes when there's a lot of aces going, kind of zig a little bit. So I like Ronaldo Lopez at 7,500 and Casey Mize at 7,100. Those are both on DraftKings. But again, both got the little rain cloud next to it. So you got to stay on top of that. Another potential pivot is an ace, Logan Webb, but he's going at the Dodgers. And so you probably won't have a lot of people on him. I trust Logan Webb everywhere. Dodgers are always difficult, always scary, but I like to pivot, especially if you're playing in these gigantic tournaments where you got to have a little bit of difference to kind of get an edge on the field there. So those are some guys that I definitely like. As far as going for hitting, even though Garrett Crochet looked great in his debut against the Tigers, he's facing Atlanta. Watch out for that rain, but give me as many Braves as I can get in there. And then give me as many right-handed Red Sox as I can get against Alex Wood. He did not look good against Cleveland. Give me your Tyler O'Neills. I'm trying to think, you know, your Trevor Stories. Casas is a lefty, but I might actually go lefty-lefty with it, to be honest, because I just don't really trust Alex Wood there. So yeah, Red Sox hitters, Casey Mize, Reynaldo Lopez, as far as pitching, or Logan Webb, if you want to pay up a little bit and go for somebody big there against a tough matchup with the Dodgers.
You brought up Logan Webb. We only have 30 seconds. Logan Webb, just again, starting off with no run support in his first start this year. Can you remember anybody else who like has had this sustained amount of non-run support as Logan Webb has? This is just getting ridiculous. Score some runs for the dude.
There's a certain guy out east on a New York ball club that's now in Texas waiting to heal and get better, named Jacob DeGrom.
Yes.
Who I think is kind of the gold standard there. But Logan Webb feels his pain, and it's brutal. And it might happen again tonight, but he should give you some good innings even against a difficult Dodgers ball club. Love Logan Webb.
By the way, I'm feeling a batting title for Jung-Hoo Lee. Might not be this year, but it's going to be one of these years.
I am with that. I love Jung-Hoo Lee, the grandson of Wind. Awesome.
The grandson of Wind. What a great nickname. Thank you, Paulie. Appreciate it.
Take care.
More NBA on the other side.